Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the CDH Radio Show. I am your host, Dawn Ireland, president of CDH International, and this week we are going to talk to the Brogdon family. Lynn Brogdon has been a member of CDH International for many, many years now, and her son, Bear, is a CDH survivor. Let's hear his story.
We have Lynn Brogdon here with us. She's going to tell us about her family's journey, her son, Bear. And Lynn, tell us what life was like pre-CDH and, you know, where you live and when you first heard the words congenital diaphragmatic hernia.
Thank you very much. Well, before CDH, we had three teenagers. They were almost 17, 16, and 12, so almost three teenagers. And we decided that, you know, after 12 years almost, we'd like to add another child to our family. We were pretty lucky. It only took about 4 months and very uneventful pregnancy. No problems at all. I was 34 when we conceived, so no special prenatal testing other than quad screening, which came back fine. No problems. Pretty uneventful pregnancy. I worked up until I was in labor with Bear. He came a few days early. He was a planned C-section because I had had three C-sections prior to. So he decided to come a little early. I won't say I was worried. I was stubborn and tried to work through labor and be in denial, but that's okay. That's the nurse in me. I am a nurse. I was working in occupational health. I'd left emergency medicine, so I wasn't doing any actual patient intensive contact at the time during my pregnancy. So that was great. So like I said, uneventful pregnancy. We go to the hospital to deliver a few days early, thinking nothing's going to be wrong. Prep for C-section, had my C-section. They did tell me he's struggling a little bit to breathe, so we're going to bag him. I'm a nurse. I knew what bagging meant. I wasn't really worried because our previous child, who was 12, he had to be bagged a little bit. So I really wasn't worried, concerned. They did tell us, well, because we had to give him a little bit of oxygen, we may take him to the NICU, but for now he's going to go on to newborn nursery. Fine. I wasn't worried, but I, if I'm being honest, in the back of my mind, maybe a little bit, my mommy senses did kind of kick in a little bit. But my husband had been a paramedic for, 15 years and had been a paramedic instructor. So I knew he knew what to watch out for. He was going to go down to newborn nursery with him. Wasn't that concerned. So they wheeled me on to recovery. My husband went with Bear down to newborn nursery. And all this that's going on is kind of unbeknownst to me because I'm recovering from a C-section. So meanwhile, I did have anesthesia come in to tell me, hey, there's a couple little issues with the baby. They're not going to bring him in to see you, but your husband and someone from the NICU will be in to talk to you. Ding, ding, ding. I kind of knew something must not be right. So in the meantime, I had a paramedic friend who I happened to see go by. He was there doing a NICU transport. He peeped in, said, hey, and all that. I found out later he kind of got a couple answers to some questions I didn't get at the time, which was probably good. So I'm going to say probably 45 minutes after giving birth, my husband and neonatology came in, and I believe my OBGYN came in. I'm not sure. And they said, you know, we don't know what's going on with the baby. You know, we think he may have a pneumothorax. I knew what a pneumothorax was. I knew how they treated that. Wasn't that worried. Then a few minutes, well, felt like a few minutes later, but I'm not exactly sure how long after, they came back in and said, we want to let you know your baby has a congenital diaphragmatic hernia. I'd never heard of congenital diaphragmatic hernia, even as a nurse. My husband and I had both seen traumatic diaphragmatic hernias. We knew what those were, knew how they're treated. So the problems, you know, that go with that, they're associated with that, we were a little familiar with, but I was still blown away. I wasn't expecting this at all. I thought I'm going to go in. I'm going to have a healthy baby. I've been through this three times before. I know what to expect. And here I'm presented with something that I'm not even really sure what it is. So, you know, trying to get my wits about me to find out, well, what does this mean? What's our course of action? Where do we go from now? And they told us, you know, we don't usually take care of these babies here. We are a level 3 NICU. So we delivered at Greenville. Well, at that time, it was Greenville Medical Center. This time, it's Prisma, which was great hospital. I felt very comfortable delivering there prior to, especially if there were any problems. So they did tell us we usually don't keep these babies here. And I found kind of interesting they referred to them as these babies quite a bit. So, you know, which I was like, well, I want to hear about my baby, not these babies. But anyway, so they did tell us there's a chance that we may have to fly him out to Medical University of South Carolina. I'm familiar with that facility, or to Emory University for ECMO. Didn't really know. I'd heard of ECMO before. Wasn't really sure a lot about what it did, especially for pediatrics or NICU babies. Wasn't real sure about that. So, you know, I asked them, well, what are you going to know if you're going to have to send him or not? And of course they said, we don't know when we're going to know. There's a lot of things that are going to have to depend on. Right now, he looks good. He's stable. His stats are great. He is intubated. I found out later my husband did get to go with him to be intubated because he used to be a preceptor for paramedic program there. So he knew respiratory, which I could have done that, but he did a great job with it. So we asked him, you know, can you keep him here in Greenville, South Carolina, as long as you can? Do you think you can manage him here? And they said, yes, we can do that for you. So by day three, they came to us early in the morning and said, his stats are great. Everything looks good. All the tests we ran looks like, you know, everything looks good. So we're going to go ahead and do his repair. We're going to get ready to go ahead and do that. And it was interesting because the surgeon was just the sweetest country guy ever. He said, we're just going to reach up in that chest and we're going to pull those things right back down. Which I don't think it made my husband feel good, but looking back, it's hilarious. So anyway, he was a really great surgeon. So day number three, they did his repair. They told us that he did have a pneumothorax during surgery. That was not an unexpected complication. They did needle decompression. And I will say we're lucky because we knew what all this meant. And I will say we're lucky we knew what it meant, but we weren't lucky because we also knew what bad things meant. So we didn't get a lot of false hope, so to speak. So anyway, surgery went great. I talked to neonatology and I talked to surgery and said, hey, when can we expect our baby to come home? That's all I was thinking of. And surgeon said, so he was born on December 4th. So surgeon said, I'm going to say 2 weeks, definitely before Christmas. The NICU nurses are looking at me going, looking back now, they knew, you know, they were there a little bit more. We did find out that we were lucky. One of the neonatologists was new to that hospital, had only been there maybe a couple of weeks, and CDH had been one of his specialties. So I wish I could remember his name, but I don't even remember. It's a little bit of a blur, but they took good care of him. There were a couple of times, you know, we had concerns. We were there the largest part of the day, which is really hard when you've got three teenagers at home. And we live in Greenville, South Carolina, but all our family's from North Carolina. So we had nobody here. My husband and myself, we were lucky. We had a large support system at church to bring food, do some things for our kids, but it was really hard to balance being there for teenagers and being there for a sick newborn. I was lucky to have some leave. So I was able to visit the hospital. Gosh, I would say I got up as soon as the kids went to school in the morning, straight to hospital, and then came home, waited for my husband to get home. We went back to the hospital till probably 9 or 9:30. My goal was to wait till the baby went to sleep, but that didn't always happen. So a couple of times, I will say there were a few hiccups, and, you know, I think us being educated as healthcare providers helped a lot. I feel really bad for people who are not in healthcare because they don't know what to look for. We definitely had an advantage. I think we had great care. There were a couple of things that we just didn't agree with. When they sent him back he had a echocardiogram and some other things, and they explained they would sedate him. And because he had an oral aversion, he didn't, and let me go back to preface that, his respirations were really high. So they weren't comfortable at a certain point feeding him by mouth. And I knew that, I understood that. So he did have an NG tube. And they said, well, you know, since we're going to go ahead and sedate him anyway, why don't we go ahead and put a feeding tube in? And I had to come apart. I will say this the one time I had to come apart. I said, I don't want that right now because I don't think, you know, that he's eating well with the NG tube. He's gaining a little bit of weight. I'm afraid if you put that in, it won't come out. I just knew from being a nurse that it would be a hard transition. Was that the right thing? I'll never know, you know, if that was the right thing or not. It worked out great for him, but I don't know that in the big picture was it. So that was our thinking behind that. He was probably 2.5 or 3 weeks old before they let him breastfeed, which was great because he would breastfeed but wouldn't bottle feed. So luckily I had prepared for that. And I think, like I said, having three children before, I already knew the day he was born to ask for breastfeeding lactation consultant. So they came in, bring me all the necessary equipment. I had to be dedicated. You know, I had to, every 2 hours I had to pump and be willing to do that. So that was kind of hard. You know, you're already sleepy when you're a new mom and you got to wake, you know, when you have the baby there, it's easy to, because they're crying, to wake up and say, hey, let me feed you on demand. But it's a lot harder when you don't have the baby there and you have to make yourself. So you have to be dedicated. So those trips back and forth to the hospital, bringing all the supplies you need, bringing all the breast milk, doing all those things was, you know, that was something we had to be dedicated to. We just had to be hypervigilant ourselves. Like I said, I think he got great care. I think, you know, we had to use our mom and dad instincts. We used our care medical background. So by about week 3.5, they told us he's doing great. He's starting to gain. He's feeding by mouth. But if you're not here all the time, he can't eat all the time since he won't take a bottle. So what's going to happen? Well, I couldn't be there 24/7. I think even had I not had teenagers at home, I still couldn't have been there 24/7. So this hospital, and I understand all facilities are different, their policy is to not let newborns go home with NG tubes. We had a great charge nurse, and she told us, she said, look, we've sent some really sick babies home with some people with far less medical experience than you guys have. So if you can show me that you can take in and out this NG tube 3 times, you could take your baby home. So I was like, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take my baby home. And you know, I've done it to other patients, adults and children. It's a whole different ballgame when it's your own child. So we took it in and out 3 times. We spent a couple of nights with him at the hospital to show that, hey, we could care for this baby. We were good to go. We were lucky in regards that our pediatrician, the office was maybe not even 5 minutes from our house. So they told us you can bring him in every day and we'll weigh him and make sure he's gaining weight. That was their big issue, making sure he's gaining weight. Well, looking back now, there were probably a few things that didn't go exactly right, but were okay. Like they didn't realize that most congenital diaphragmatic hernia babies have reflux. They had what they said, he has the spits. Well, looking back now, I know that was reflux. So it took us probably a few months to realize that's what it was. You know, that I knew he wasn't vomiting, but I didn't know that's what it was. So I hate that we missed out on going home on reflux medication, that we spent so long without it. But it's neither here nor there. So we're 13 years later and we're still on double doses of reflux medication. We've just come to accept that. We can deal with that. So Bear came home on day 28. He came home on New Year's Eve, which was a great New Year's Eve present. We always sang that song, please come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's. Makes me tear up a little bit. So that was like our little song. I thought I wasn't going to cry. But anyway, so we brought him home. He did great. He did not want to take a bottle, especially not for me. And I knew I was going to have to go back to work in a few weeks. So luckily, my husband's a great dad. He says, you know what? I'll get him to take a bottle. So he got him to take a bottle so that we could get him to feed. Pretty typical newborn as far as sleep patterns. None of our children slept through the night till they were 2. So I wasn't worried about that. So once we got over the fear of going in to check on him every so often, that helped a lot. I think that's a new anxiety a lot of newborn parents have. But when you have a sick baby, yeah. And at this point, I hadn't read anything online about congenital diaphragmatic hernia. I hadn't had time, a lot of time to. So that was probably a blessing. I did go back, pull out a couple of nurse textbooks. They didn't tell me much. So anyway, my husband read some things. He actually heard about cherubs first, read about that and said, that's something I want you to look into when you're ready. So we waited a while for that. We made it through the first few months. Like I said, I wish we had known about reflux, but we made it through that. So he was born in December. By March, I was back to work. He was doing well because he was home with my husband. I was working second shift. So that was really good. I found cherubs. So I found a support system. There were so many answers that I got from my peers that I just couldn't get from the medical community. because there's a practical knowledge that you can have it in the book textbooks, you can read about it, but until people have actually gone through it, you can't get that whole picture. So I was able to get some answers, that things to look for, to know that what I was feeling was not uncommon. So that was probably one of the, I will say probably one of the best things that ever happened to us with that whole experience, was knowing that we were not alone. So by the summertime, you know, we had that whole system built up, support system. We were in our groove with having a newborn baby and three teenagers, which is strange because we were also touring colleges at this point. We got some stairs and I learned quickly they do not have changing tables in college restrooms. So if your baby has a blowout, you're going to put them on the floor. So we did some college tours with a newborn and, you know, a slightly sick newborn. People didn't get when we told him he had a congenital diaphragmatic hernia. They thought, oh, he's got a hernia. He's got an umbilical hernia. I know that's what they thought. So they just didn't get it. He did go to daycare for a little while. He was late with sitting up. He missed those milestones with reaching for toys. You know, kids were taking toys away from him, even as an infant, when he should be sitting up doing that. I wasn't that worried, and probably because I'd been through it before, and I also knew that that was really common because I had that support system for my peers who had children who had the same birth defect. So that made a huge difference. He talked just fine. He met all the cognitive milestones. He just missed some of those with his motor skills. So by the time, you know, let's go around by first birthday, he's not walking. I'm not worried. We had two that didn't walk till they were over a year old anyway. Well, then we get to 18 months and he's not walking. I'm really not worried because I already knew this was common. Our pediatrician was a little worried. I will say at the time, he's probably about my age. So he was mid 30s. He pulled out his textbooks all the time. He'd say, you know what? There's a textbook for this. He's textbook for that. So he said he learned a lot too. But we had great pediatricians who also had another baby that was born with a congenital diaphragmatic hernia at the same time. And she's part of our organization as well. So he asked both of us, hey, do you guys want to talk, you know, not violating any HIPAA laws or anything. And we did get to talk some, so I think it was great for her. But so on to the not walking, pediatrics had decided they were going to, let's do some hip x-rays. Well, before the x-rays could even take place, he started walking. So that was great. Like I said, I had that support system to know this is common, this happens. Well, by this point, he was doing a lot of coughing at night. We weren't diagnosed. We just got diagnosed finally with the reflux through a swallowing study. Not the reflux, but we had a swallow study because he did have the oral aversion. And we noticed that he wasn't really spitting up like you do with reflux or anything like that, but he was almost regurgitating food. I couldn't get him to reproduce in the doctor's office. It was so random because he started eating, you know, really good on solid foods then. So we did go to a developmental specialist, which we found out all of our NICU babies get a referral. They did, you know, they did what they could do there. They said, let's send him on for a swallow study. Swallow studies, they said, wait a minute, we see something a little bit lower. Something looks different. Well, he had an esophageal stricture. So that explained the whole, not really vomiting, but food coming back up, which was a blessing to know that something really was there. So anyway, they did an esophageal stretch. They did esophageal stretch. They stretched that, did a balloon procedure. And the surgeon, it was the same surgeon who did his repair, pediatric surgeon. He said, look, I'm going to tell you, I haven't seen one this significant in a baby this size. I think he said it was 8 millimeters, if I remember correctly. And he said, I can't tell you why. He said he suspected it had something maybe to do with the CDH. He said, but I can't tell you that, you know, he said, but I wouldn't be surprised. So anyway, he's had five dilations from that. He's doing pretty good since he was about 8 or 9 years old with not having those periods where he couldn't swallow, something was stuck, and it was the inflammation there. And he'd go, it could be anywhere from 2 minutes to 2 or 3 days where he couldn't pass any food, he couldn't pass any liquid. So we'd have to go in for an emergency procedure to have that dilation done. They checked various reasons to see, is this an allergy thing? You know, let's try to find out a cause for it. So the last time we had it done, he was in fourth grade and it was a scheduled procedure because they didn't want to run into another emergency procedure. And he said, I don't know what to tell you, but it's gone. You know, I don't have an explanation for it, just like I don't have an explanation why it's there. once in a while, he will have an issue where he'll say, oh, I think something's getting stuck. He knows there's foods he can eat and there's foods he can't eat. Bless the poor little guy's heart. He went 3 months where he only ate pancakes because that's all that would go down. So he did really well with once he had the dilation done. They told us at first in the hospital, look, we don't know how sick he's going to be. We don't know if he'll walk. We don't know if he'll run. We really wouldn't be surprised if he'll never play sports because we don't know what his lung capacity is going to be. We found out later that lungs are great. Every x-ray he has, they look like they're full capacity. They look like they are fully grown. His heart looks like it's developed. We were told that they suspect that his actual herniation probably didn't occur till at or right before birth because there was no growth retardation or anything. Everything was like it should be. So they don't, you know, they don't have a clue. I had my last ultrasound before he was born 2 weeks and everything looked in place. Then they did several because they thought I had a Creta, which I didn't, but we were lucky that we did get several more ultrasounds than what we normally would have had. So everything was good on our 20 week anatomy scan. Everything was good. Every other scan that I had for what they could see. So they don't feel like they missed anything, but we'll never know. So anyway, you know, like I said, they told us we don't know what his limitations are going to be. We just don't know because we don't know. It's such a variety for, once again, these babies. So we don't know. Well, he's played basketball. He still continues to play basketball. He's played football. He's played baseball. He plays golf. We've limited the football. He didn't really want to play. He had a brother who played all the way up through college. So that was enough. So he wasn't really into it. And really, we got to thinking, you know, he's made it this far. Do we really want to take any more chances? And I will say now that he's 13, sometimes it's evident. You know, he has a diagnosis of asthma. He isn't on any daily medication anymore. He did take some daily meds. He does have an inhaler that he uses just PRN, just when he needs it. He does take reflux medicine every day, a double dose, but that's it. And allergy meds, because we're in the South. So allergy meds in the fall and the spring. And he used to, every spring, we knew he was going to get pneumonia up until he was probably about 8 or 9. Was it from the CDH? We don't know. Usually it was precipitated by allergies. So, and then, or a cold. We knew that was going to happen at least once a year. Knock on wood, he's outgrown that, or at least we hope. So he, like I said, he does still play sports. I've noticed he gets winded some. He's very tall and gangly, so he's going through that teenager thing. But he always tries. You know, he's able to make it around the golf course. He's able to make it up and down the basketball court. He's able to do the things that he wants to do, and we're fine with that. So he's exceeded a little bit more. You know, we kind of play it by ear. You know, he does have a learning disability. He has dysgraphia. We probably a little bit of ADHD. He does have a diagnosis. He has an IEP for school, and most of that's for the dysgraphia, for the writing thing. So, you know, and our other kids, three teenagers, had no issues at all. That we know of. So he's just different. But it's okay. He's setting his own course and everything. And I would say that from what I know of all the other patients with congenital diaphragmatic hernias, he's probably, as they told us there, we put these babies in thirds. A third aren't going to live. A third will be seriously ill and a third will be just fine, which I know that's probably not the best way. It's not the most accurate, but that's what they told us then. So I would say Bear's probably at the top. So that is where we are with Bear right now. Anything
13 else? That just, where did the time go? I mean, because you guys joined him,
I can't believe it.
You know, and the first time
he was 3 months old.
Yeah, went to the conference in 2008, or is it 9? 2008 or 9?
It was eight because he was a few months old, the summer of 8.
Yeah,
he was so little,
and it's. Yeah, I love watching these kids grow up. So thank you for, you know, letting us this journey for 13 years. But it's just, the time's flying.
Oh, for sure.
They're growing up, getting married, having kids of their own. I feel old, Lynn. I've been around a long time.
I know. He has a girlfriend he goes out with almost every kid. He's almost 5'6".
Wow.
I know. I can't believe it either. No, you know, And we love sharing him with you. You will never, ever know what a blessing you are to our family. Oh. I'll cry just talking about it, but you
don't make me cry. I got this far in this interview.
And you, I know. I mean, you'll just, you are, when I say my prayers, you're right up there on top.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah,
this whole
family.
Yeah, this whole CDH family is just, is made it where sometimes we could find the answers that we needed, or to know that, hey, this happens, you know, maybe not answers, but to know that it's expected. And sometimes if all you need is to know that somebody else is out there feeling the same thing you're feeling or going through the same thing you're going through, that's all you need.
Yeah. Well,
and I didn't mean to make you cry.
You know, we got through almost the whole thing without crying, so that's good.
It's good tears. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good tears. And, you know, we still have a long way to go. And there's probably some things that, you know, we'll never know. Is this from this? You know, I've tried to go back through ancestry.com. Have you done that to look at old death certificates? I found out my grandmother's sister, who I knew died when she was 27, had a congenital double aortic arch. And that's probably had some, she had a, she couldn't talk or eat. And it's probably from that. And I'm like, wow, wonder if any of those two things, you know, have anything to do, you know, genetics. But so it's pretty interesting to go back and do all that. But we definitely appreciate you guys and want to do what we can to help. Well, so I hope you got what you needed.
Yes, no, thank you. And also thank you for volunteering for all these years, for, you know, continuing to help.
Oh, no problem.
Families, we really appreciate that. So one of the great things about having our conference online on the 28th through the 30th of April is that everyone can meet everyone without having to travel anywhere. You know, we can meet the family.
Yes.
These nice. For years. And we're going to have round tables for the teenagers. So if Bear wants to meet other teenagers with CDH, they're going to have their own room to talk and share and say whatever they want, or talk about girls or sports or CDH. We don't care. We just want them to meet other kids like them, because a lot of kids have never met another survivor. And so that is so important for, you know, their emotional
growth. And I don't think he has. Yeah, I don't think he has. So that will be interesting. He talks about his scar all the time. So that might be interesting.
Well, it'll be great to have him meet the other kids online. You know,
yes. Well, I appreciate it. Yes. Any opportunities for like that, for sure. And anything you need, please let me know, because we owe you all a lot, a great deal. We are so grateful. So grateful.
No, it's, we're all in this together, you know? It's
for sure.
I'm grateful to be a part of, you know, Bear's life in a little way, and everyone else's, into just, you know, all of us. I mean, it's, you know,
we're making lemonade out of lemons for sure. I know you
have
are.
To. Well, I mean, really all do. Of us, all of our journeys have taken a toll, no matter what the outcome. You know, all of our lives have changed, whether our children are still here, whether they're struggling a little bit or a lot, or the ones who are gone. Like, CDH has completely changed every one of our lives. None of us are.
No matter what the extent, you're right. No matter what the extent, it has.
Yeah. And so we have to take that and make something positive out of it, no matter the income, because we didn't go through all of this for nothing, or just to spend our lives around and complaining about it and not being able to change anything. We have to take.
You're right. I know my grandfather used to say, we are here to help our fellow man. So that's what we're here for.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for sharing your story about Bear. We are so honored to watch him grow up and to become such an incredible young man. The time is flying by so very quickly, and it's wonderful to see our survivors grow and thrive and become incredible inspiration for newly diagnosed CDH families. So thank you all for joining us this week. It is an honor to be with you all again and to share more stories of CDH patients and to raise awareness. Please join us again next week. And if you would like your patient to be featured at CDH International on our radio show, on our blog, on our telethon, and in the media, you can reach us at www.cdhi.org/share your story.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.